is indeed the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Guillermo Mash on behalf of the Without a Roof radio program. And you are indeed listening to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Also, be aware that opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
Give me 2 eggs. So, tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life? 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds and different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth, who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. Buggy Mash for the Without a Roof radio program. I usually spend a couple of minutes at this point talking about the show. I don't have time, man. I'm actually in the studio trying to get this down to 30 minutes. But I can assure you that listening to this program at the end, you're going to know that you've just listened to some of the finest poverty and economic justice broadcast journalism that you can hear anywhere here on People Powered Radio. All right, this one's going out to our friends in Sacramento. This is a post from Paula Lamazzi on her Facebook page. Paula is the executive director at Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee. Steve Auger died last month. He had been living on the river for a decade or two. He wanted to get into housing. He had enough income to rent an apartment. Navigators helped him get his ID, which took a couple of months. Then he was able to access his money. He was unable to go apartment hunting because he had no motorized wheelchair or car and no one to help him get an apartment, which I think he really needed. Someone to help secure an apartment. A man dies by a river because he's got no help, got no hope. Blessings to Sacramento and everyone else in that situation. Guillermo Mash for the January 11th Without a Roof radio program. We have Shahara Hyatt from the California Homeless Youth Project, and she's got some words around the Tampa Bay arrest. So welcome to the show, Shahara Hyatt.
Hi, Bill. Thanks so much. Thanks for bringing up this important issue. You know, I think that these anti-homelessness laws, including those that limit food sharing, you know, they're based on the flawed logic that people are choosing to be homeless and that providing assistance to people living on the streets somehow enables that choice, and that the only way around it is criminal sanctions. Because this theory is a myth based on stereotypes, it actually does nothing to reduce homelessness. So we know based on some research that we did, upwards of 90% of people living without shelter want to change their living situation, but lack the resources to do that. And we know that there's not enough shelter or housing in any community across the country to meet the need. And then the other 10% are likely so disenfranchised by systems or society that has been unwilling and unable to serve them or support them that they've given up hope. So, you know, I think that these laws against food sharing are really criminalizing compassion and mutual aid and only serve to limit our humanity. And that city parks are public places that should be used for the public good. And it's hard to think of anything greater than keeping our neighbors who are hungry and need alive. These laws are shallow, classist, and inhumane to both people experiencing homelessness and to the community members who are trying to help meet their most basic needs. We can do better as cities, as counties, as states, and as a country.
That was awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill. Looking forward to it.
I'm here with Steve O'Brien, Poland Psych Relief, who's going to answer this week's question of what he sees as a business owner is the face of poverty downtown and what he perceives that the DCBA and the Chamber of Commerce are doing to address it. So thank you so much, Steve O'Brien from Poland Cyclery.
I'll answer the second question first. I have no idea what the Chamber of Commerce and DCBA are doing about it. We're down at the south end of downtown, and we don't realize much benefit from Downtown Chico Business Association, although we are members and pay dues. As to the first part, owing to the fact that I have a bicycle store, I see a lot of folks that I classify as living lightly, and they use their bicycle for transportation and for recreation also. but it's their lifeline to the stores and from getting to point A to point B and getting to their jobs and such. And so it's critically important to them. Also, in downtown's a large segment of homeless folks. Folks call them transient, but they don't seem to be transient because you see the same faces month after month after month. They're residents. A lot of folks are from Chico, but a lot of people have immigrated to Chico because we have services. And I hear through the grapevine that a lot of government entities refer people to Chico because we have services. I try to have empathy for these people, but a lot of them don't help me have empathy because they're nasty. A lot of them are mentally ill. A lot of them are paroled criminals who haven't gone back to where they're supposed to after they're paroled from the prisons. Like I said, I try to have empathy for these folks, and I save old parts for them to keep their bikes running, but I'm really disgusted by a lot of them, and I'm disgusted by society that doesn't take care of these folks better.
A point I hadn't really even considered until we started this interview, Steve, but you are definitely a touch point for any bike shop's going to be a touch point for the homeless community, because nearly every homeless person has a bike or their friends have bikes. What would you say to that?
Well, I think we get a majority of those folks because my bike store is kind of funky, and I'm known as a person who keeps old tires and old parts. If they have a little bit of life left in them, I keep them. And these folks come in here that are destitute, and I know how much they depend on their bikes. And so we'll offer them parts and stuff if they're nice, if they're polite, if they're respectful, if they say thank you. But they want a lot, and a lot of folks have an entitlement sort of thing going on where they feel that I should be compelled to fix their bikes just because I'm a bike shop. And I'm sorry, it's hard enough for us to make a living without trying to support these folks. Long-term solution, I have no idea. I think the population of homeless and displaced people is going to continue to grow in America as the inequality in income gets bigger, not smaller, during the Trump administration. I think we're going to see more and more and more displaced folks and sleeping in our doorways.
I can attest to the used tires because I have one on my bike. It's a wonderful bike shop. It has a great reputation around town, Steve, and we're just glad that you're here doing your business and that you're a board member for KZFR.
No problem. I get involved in things I love, and KZFR is one of them, and the bike community is another one, certainly.
All right, that was Steve O'Brien from Poland Cyclery. I just want to have a minute to land on something I'm going to be covering from a investigative journalism perspective, some of the comments around what Steve has seen and what he's being told. The first thing, real briefly, is the whole quote-unquote people are coming here for services. About 2 years ago or thereabouts, they had a six-month review for Sit and Lie, and one of the police officers got up there and made a whole bunch of statements, but one of the statements he had made was just what Mr. Steve O'Brien had stated on the radio, that people are coming here for services. I met him outside. I had a great conversation, professional conversation, respectful conversation, had to kind of drill, but finally he came out and said its services are that people find it too easy to get food here. So there's more around it than that. But the other thing I want to say is to get down here, the time crunch, but the whole thing of people are getting dropped off here is a total and complete myth. And I don't want you to just take it at my word. I'm going to be hitting the streets and hitting the streets hard to explain exactly why this is the fact. Okay, I don't have time to do that right now, and I could. I think I'm fairly good with my words, and I really know the subject matter. But please, if you hear people telling you that people are being dropped off here from probation parole illegally because of services, you know, tell those people maybe they want to contact the Enterprise Record or the Chico News and Review. Oh, whoa, maybe the police would be the ones having the contact with those people and say, you know, if this is really happening, why isn't this front page news? It's not front page news because it's a myth propagated to put poor people down. Without a Roof Radio program is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Airport Storage, providing safe and secure drive-up ground-level storage units in a variety of sizes. Airport Storage also offers on-site management, security cameras, and an automatic gate with extended hours. Located off Cohasset Road across from the Chico Airport. For more information, visit airportstorage.com or by calling 530-893-4279. All right, this next piece, actually, I had to do, I don't like to do radio edits for time. I don't like to do it, but I had to do it for this one. The original interview with Desiree and Cliff ran 18 and a half minutes, and it is excellent in every possible way, as will this piece that I've put together for the time limit of 30 minutes. But I will be providing a link on my YouTube page, Follow Without a Roof. Go to my YouTube site. It'll be the most latest link, but I'm going to be posting their entirety of their interview, and I'll be playing the quote-unquote radio edit right here, right now. And I want a big, huge shout-out to Cliff and Desiree and all the folks in Tampa Bay and beyond that are working to help poor people in the inner cities. And another shout-out for Keith McHenry and every person that is involved with Food Not Bombs, which literally is helping poor people in the country, around the world, with meals and assistance and love and care. And that's what we need more of here on People Powered Radio. All right, Gamma Mash for the January 11th Without a Roof Radio program here on KZFR 90.1 FM, People Powered Radio. It's my distinct pleasure. I have on the phone lines here in the production studio, I have Desiree Lynn from Tampa Bay, Florida, and Cliff Kelly. They're both members of Tampa Bay Food Not Bombs who are involved in an arrest activity where seven people that were feeding a community meal in downtown Tampa Bay were arrested for simply providing food for people that needed it. So welcome to KZFR, Desiree and Cliff.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just start right into the chase here. You know, tell our listeners what happened from your vantage point. Maybe I'll start with you, Cliff, you're the videographer that took that video. I actually looked at it, Cliff. I think there was like 20 people that had seen it. Now it's up to like 675,000. What did you see and what happened?
Yeah, I mean, I put my sandwiches on the table as Desiree and the others were setting up the table, and the police were already there by that time. I wasn't sure if there was going to be any conflict or not, but it was clear they started giving warnings that people would be arrested if anyone ate or shared food. And that was the point where I figured it would be a good idea to get my phone out and record what was happening so that people could know what was going on. And then obviously, as you see in the video, they literally went up behind people that were putting food on plates and just kind of dragged them off and put them in handcuffs and took them over to the police station.
Now, Desiree, I understand you were one of the folks that were physically arrested. You know, how did it feel or look from your side of the story of actually having handcuffs put on you?
I mean, it's not the first time systems that are threatened, their power is threatened by people defying unjust laws and ordinances. They usually try to intimidate in this way. So I've experienced that before. It's really, to me, it's heartbreaking because Food Not Bombs is a part of my life. It's not, I don't view people as, you know, this is just a block of people that I come and do this deed for. These are my friends, and many of them I consider family, and they're a part of my life, like I'm a part of their life, and it was really just heartbreaking to have that, you know, those moments that we've shared for years together be threatened by something so arbitrary.
Now, were you given prior quote-unquote notice from the Tampa Bay police that they were going to start cracking down on providing food for people that don't have anything?
Yeah, and I'll explain that briefly, but on Tuesday, we have a morning share at 8 a.m. Saturday is our other food share at 4 p.m., but on Tuesday morning, I'm usually there by myself, and, you know, we share with, you know, 30, 35 people on Tuesday morning. I was standing at the table serving food, and up comes a Tampa Parks and Rec vehicle right up to the table. The man jumped out before he said anything else. He said, pack it up and leave immediately, and, of course, I refused. People were still eating. People were still getting plates of food. And he threatened to call the police and have them arrest me for not leaving. And so I told him he could go ahead and do that. And so in total, five police ended up coming to the scene and took my ID, held it for half an hour, made some phone calls before they came and told me that if I was coming out again, I would need to have a permit, to which I replied that, you know, I'm never applying for a permit to share food with people in a public, you know, city park, and that I would be back there again at a normal time. The police have passed us by like numerous times over the past, you know, over 3 years at our, you know, twice weekly food shares and done nothing. They never batted an eye. They never had a problem with it. So for them to suddenly quote this ordinance and dust it off and try to weaponize it against us so that they could protect, you know, tourist dollars, they stood to profit, I think it was upwards of $300 million over this playoff event that they had here. You know, it's really hypocritical, and it really shows the city's true colors when it comes to how they treat and address the people that are suffering the most in the community.
Let's just land on that real quick as far as this quote-unquote economic impact of this playoff game. So in your eyes, from your view, being there on the ground, what are you specifically talking about for our listeners that may not understand, you know, downtown Tampa Bay?
As far as the event itself, I had no idea it was even happening until I'm not plugged into those communities. But apparently there was a big national high-profile sports game and a concert with people like Usher and other, you know, giant names in the music industry coming to play. And they made a huge, you know, a huge event out of it at Curtis Hickson Park. Well, there are a lot of houseless people that stay in Curtis Hickson Park, so they chased them all out. They put giant fences up, constructed this, you know, really lavish entrance and lavish setup for people that are guests in our community. And, you know, they use that as pretext to go around the city and tell people that are already having a really difficult time that they needed to, quote, disappear for 2 weeks until these events were over. You know, they use this event where people were coming to our community and could really learn something about the issues that we deal with here and what really goes on in Tampa Bay. Not that there's not good things that happen here, but there's an ugly face to what's going on. There's resources that are being diverted that are desperately needed by people who are suffering. And, you know, it was an opportunity that was lost for people that could have seen and learned about, you know, a community that's struggling. So the event went off without a hitch. And in the meantime, 7 people were arrested for sharing food. And who knows how many other people were diverted from the city, arrested, given trespass warnings or trespass from public areas to disappear them from the view of tourists. And, you know, and people didn't get to eat and share with us like they usually do.
There's so much irony to that. I mean, it's, you know, everyone likes to use these words, transients. We don't want transients in our community, but now the Tampa Bay actually pushes community, longtime community members out of their public space so they can have people that are coming just to see an event. I mean, it's horrible. I'm going to turn it back over to Cliff and try to get a little insight on both of your involvements with Food Not Bombs, maybe a little bit of the past history, and either one of you trying to just tell our listeners a little bit about Food Not Bombs. Folks listening may have never even heard that term.
When I witnessed the arrest, that was actually my first involvement of any kind with Food Not Bombs. I had had some friends who had shared food with them in the past, and I'd kind of heard about it, and it was on my radar. But it wasn't until I heard that the Tampa Police Department was harassing people for sharing food that I finally, you know, got my butt out there and tried to do what I could. And as a rather inactive member of the Tampa Bay community up to this point, it was really jarring to see what actually goes on the front lines against hunger and against poverty and things like that. Although that was my first time being involved, it certainly won't be my last. And I think that that's true for a lot of people in Tampa Bay who are sort of finally waking up like I am to what goes on around here. And we will be there to defend our friends. Absolutely.
I do an awful lot of outreach and with my friends. You know, I've been involved with Chico Food Not Bombs, and they are part of our community, and they are our friends. You know, when you see something happen to your friends, you know, you stand up. And I'm really glad you guys are doing that. How long have you been involved with Food Not Bombs in Tampa Bay, Desiree?
Myself, I got involved just over 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But they've been serving a meal probably a lot longer than that. For our listeners, just real fast, I'll just give you the gloss, and I'm hoping to have Keith McHenry on the either live or on a pre-recorded and give a little more detail. But Food Not Bombs has been around since the early to mid-80s, and they're actually an international organization that provides meals around the globe for community members that may otherwise go hungry. And how long have they been doing that activity, Food Not Bombs, in Tampa Bay?
Tampa has been going on for over a decade. Back in 2004, several members of Food Not Bombs Tampa underwent the same kind of harassment, the same kind of threats, the same arrests, the same charges. They received the same kind of backlash that they're receiving now, and they disgraced themselves just like other cities have disgraced themselves in the face of, you know, really a public that's crying out, why are you doing something like this? Why are you criminalizing compassion and kindness with the people that you should be concerned with serving in your community? So they lost that battle then, and we really didn't think that they would, you know, try to pick this fight again. But they're doing it, and we're going to continue to share food. Food Not Bombs, we're solidarity. We're not a charity. We don't view people as others. We view them as, you know, tied up and tangled up in our own liberation. So our struggle is all, you know, enjoined with one another. We get foods that would otherwise have been thrown away. You know, it's like 40%, 40 to 50% of food waste in this country, and it goes in the trash uneaten. We're repurposing that food, and we're serving healthy meals at a time when people are physically compromised. We don't just share food. We have clothing. We have books. We are friends with these folks. You know, they come back to our home. They hang out. They spend time with us. We spend time with them. They're involved in our lives just like anyone else that's in our circle would be involved. You know, so we're not just, you know, coming out there for a special event. I do resent, you know, having, you know, them tell us, you know, lump us in with community picnics and parades and things like that need special permits. The verbiage in the ordinance doesn't even apply to Tampa Food Not Bombs, but to lump us in as though we're just another party that's going on in the community is wrong. We're providing a service and we're doing it purposefully, very intentionally, in the space that we're doing it as a response to the city, that you're not going to invisibilize these people. You're not going to disappear the problems that you've helped to exacerbate and that you're ignoring.
Yeah, I could speak to the four different cities I've been to, Deseret, and in my experience is it's an uplifting and a beautiful experience for everyone involved, because it really connects the community both ways. You know, folks that are housed with folks that aren't, and they, for that short period of time, man, not only do they get a good meal, they're around people that care for them, and it's a big, big deal for folks that are hungry, angry, lonely, tired on our streets.
Exactly.
All right, as I'd mentioned on the intro to that piece, we have about 8 more minutes. It's going to be out on a YouTube archive. Check us out on Facebook. Check us out on YouTube. Check me out on Tumblr. Google Without a Roof, and it'll come right to the top, and you'll be able to find that link to the YouTube archive right after that. Those points that ended this conversation to Deseret being led away in handcuffs and how that felt. So tune into that, and thank you for listening to People Power Radio. It's my distinct pleasure. I got Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs. Just a little bit about Food Not Bombs and the situation in Tampa Bay, Keith McHenry.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us. I mean, this has been an ongoing pattern, particularly in California and Florida, where city governments will try to drive the homeless out of sight, and will do it and with the idea that they can, you know, if they got rid of Food Not Bombs and stop outdoor food programs, that would somehow hide the crisis of homelessness and hunger in our country. And so it's really a shame. I do believe that the global pressure on Tampa will ultimately cause the city to stop arresting people. You know, when you look into the arrests of people sharing free food, what one finds is that there aren't actually really any solid legal footing to bust people for feeding the hungry, and particularly Food Not Bombs, because we're an all-volunteer movement, and we're out there doing something that the city itself is not accomplishing, which is we're actually addressing the crisis of people, you know, needing food. And they really have no business bothering us. City government like Tampa could actually provide free meals to everybody, no problem. They could actually provide, if they really were so keen on hiding the problem, they could set up a indoor food program somewhere, you know, if that's really their intention. But that's really not their intention. They don't want the, you know, precious tax dollars going to addressing issues of homelessness and poverty. They want it to go to their, you know, developer friends and the people that are funding their re-election campaign.
This is Gamil Mash on behalf of the January 11th, 2017 Without a Roof radio program. And it's my distinct pleasure to have on the phone here for a pre-record Shelby Nacino, class of 2018, law student, policy advocacy clinic, University of California, Berkeley, School of Law. Welcome to KZFR 90.1 FM.
Yeah, so I'm a law student at UC Berkeley, and I'm currently working on a team that is interested in studying the business improvement districts in various cities in California.
So with that said, what does the face of poverty look like in downtown Chico based upon the folks you have talked to, and what does it seem to you that the business improvement district has been doing to address that?
You know, I've not visited Chico directly. A lot of what our report has been interviewing people who are on the ground, as well as talking with the city and submitting public records requests to the city. So I don't know specifically from my experience what the face of poverty looks like on the ground. But when I talk to people who are service providers, for example, a lot of the statistics that you can find in, you know, the point in time survey indicate that a lot of people who are homeless in Chico are from the area. People tend to say that they're experiencing homelessness because of financial issues. So there's a lot of issues. What we haven't seen is that people who are experiencing homelessness in Chico are all like from somewhere else, what people would label as like transient. What I've learned from talking to people is that a lot of people who are, you know, going through a hard time or experiencing poverty or homelessness in Chico are from the area and are experiencing it for a lot of different reasons, a lot of them which are financial.
The second part of the question is what based upon your interviewing for this report that'll be coming out fairly shortly, as I understand it, what does it seem like the Business Improvement District has done or has been pushing to help alleviate poverty in the downtown business area?
So in terms of what we've been seeing, the Business Improvement District, and I should note that when we say the Business Improvement District, in Chico, what we're really referring to is Downtown Chico Business Association, which manages the area that is the Business Improvement District. What we've seen is that they have several kind of ways of addressing poverty. They work with service providers. So there's the Downtown Ambassadors, which are largely supported by the DCBA. And then they also have the Cleanup Brigade, which, you know, was in conjunction with the Jesus Center. And then they also have this campaign where the Generosity Campaign, for example, which encourages giving directly to service providers rather than to panhandlers. And then, of course, the biggest thing that we've seen the DCBA do is, in our eyes, is advocacy in support of the CITLI ordinance as well as the Offenses Against Public Property ordinances. There's a lot of different things that the BID is doing, but the question is whether any of them are necessarily the best way to reach and provide services to individuals who are homeless in the area.
Because I do know just from the city council meetings and stuff that certainly the chamber and the DCBA are well noted in public record of being in support of these criminalization activities. And these same organizations now, Shelby, are coming back going, you know, we're still having problems. What are we going to do now? And as an advocate and someone that's been covering this story almost 5 years, I'm not the least bit surprised, because criminalizing people is not going to help their face of poverty downtown. Is there anything you would like to add to that or expand upon?
So part of what we are looking at is also the enforcement side of it. And I should note that the ambassadors, as well as, you know, the private security that you see downtown, are part of an effort to provide coverage to an area that, you know, at least some people perceive is not adequately covered by the police. But in terms of the enforcement that we've seen from the police, and then also, we don't actually have access to complete, you know, police records. But what I've seen from weekly arrest logs is that the police have not really enforced, at least CITLI. The public perception of the enforcement is that it's not really being enforced, or even if it were to be enforced, people aren't being sent to jail for CITLI or for offenses against public property.
Although actually you were actually talking about a very interesting way of looking at it, because I was actually in those city council meetings, and the way they were able to, not the entire way they were able to get it passed, was, hey, once we have these laws on the books, we're going to tell people to move and they're going to do it. And there was actually a lot of discussion at city council about, we don't want to be spending money on police enforcement. So this sounds pretty cool to me. We just tell people to move and they do, you know?
It's basically the ordinance are used to get people to move. And, you know, what a lot of people feel like this results in is actually just shifting people around. So you move them from one area, they get moved to someone else's neighborhood. They have to move because they're constantly on the move, because if they stay somewhere, you know, they could be asked to move by the police, or they could be harassed by, like, you know, security or anyone who just thinks like you need to leave. In terms of like the actual efficacy of the laws, it's hard to tell, because from what we've looked at, we don't have like very complete police record. From people's experiences, it sounds like they're just being asked to move. That's how the law is actually playing out.
Well, anything else you'd like to add for closing comments, Shelby?
I think that one major concern for us in studying the Business Improvement District in Chico, i.e. the DCBA, is that the Downtown Chico Business Association receives funds from the city. It receives business license assessments, which are levied upon, you know, businesses in the district. So these are public funds. And from what we've tried to get from the city, we actually haven't received any, like, form of compliance or, like, any form of audit that the city conducts on the use of these funds, even though these funds are strictly supposed to be used for very specific purposes that are listed in California law. So that's one issue that was really something that we're looking into in our report. And besides these funds, there are also other funds that the DCBA receives from the city. So we have this organization that obviously really wants to improve economic development by supporting businesses, but it's being given a lot of financial support. And the question is whether the DCBA has everyone's interests in mind as it's embarking on these policies, which it thinks will foster economic development.
Guillermo Mash here for the Without a Roof radio program, January 11th. Wrapping it up, I want to thank all of our guests, all of our listeners, and a shout out to anyone, anywhere that is fighting for the ending of poverty and fighting for economic justice for all. And speaking of which, next week, January 18th, we're going to be covering on this show a production that's being hosted by North Valley Housing Trust, and it's called Story Streets Movie Nights, and that's going to be a country day school at one of their facility buildings. It's actually on the corner, Broadway, 1054 Broadway Street. It's the old Salvation Army building. But real short story is this is a film that Susan Sarandon was involved in, and it's a really compelling film about poverty and homelessness around the United States with some compelling and well-constructed ways that we can actually address that. And be sure to check that out, and be sure to listen to us next week here on People